Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. We're going to continue from last week's show, part two, today. And you recall, hopefully, that we're talking about community schools, a phenomena that is growing, a phenomena that has had a long but somewhat checkered history, going back to what many would call the founding era with Jane Addams. And I mentioned that John Dewey played a little role, but did not follow through on his initial contribution to what we now call community schools. And I raised questions on that first show about community schools. In addition to saying what they are, I raised the question of whether or not community schools is public schools' last chance to survive this war in a form that is still recognizable as public school, functioning for the public good. I also raised the question, but did not get into it, that of given where we are today, quote, the 21st century, and we talk about the new 21st century schools, to me, the question would be, if we're going to have this new 21st century school, and assuming that my question that the community schools are the new 21st century schools, then I raised a further question of the 21st century teacher, the 21st century parent. I raised the question of in whose interest is the new community school serving? And that these are questions, particularly that last one, in whose interest? We need to always, always ask that question. Two questions we must always ask. The why question, which could be related to the purpose, but the why of this, the why of that, and then, and whose purpose does this phenomena serve? So I'm going to try and get back into it. I must say up front two things. One, this should have been at least a three-part show, and I'm feeling really guilty by not having structured it as a three-part show. There is so much to be said on this topic and its ramifications that I can't really do it justice in two shows. I won't do a third show because there's some things that I want to do starting in October, but I do feel guilty for not having structured this as a three-parter minimally. I apologize for that, because I'm not going to be able to do all the things that I think I need to do and do justice to it. The second thing is, we have a knight, Lady Jo, who's not feeling well, hasn't been for the last few days, and she is, shall we say, sort of down in that, she really can't do all the things that she normally would be doing at this point in the last few days because she's sick. And as a result, as I always try and do, this show is for Joe. Joe, just remembering what I just said, I may not be able to do a good job on this. I don't mean to lay that on you. Maybe I should wait and do another show next week and dedicate that show to you for getting well. Anyway, let me get with it. Community schools. I left off by talking about community schools have sprouted in different directions. And some of the directions, more prominent directions, which we have seen the evolution of community schools from, quote, the Jane Addams concept of Hull House that got us started back in the early 1900s, is what they call community in schools. And I'll get into that. Then there is the full-service community school. There is the 21st century learning centers that has a great connection. I said great connection. Have a connection with No Child Left Behind. What I probably won't be able to get into are the university-assisted community schools, and particularly the University of Pennsylvania's West Philadelphia Improvement Corp. Let me say it again. The University of Pennsylvania's West Philadelphia Improvement Corp. I'm going to try and get at least a couple words in, but I may not. Starting with schools and communities. It's the concept of having this organization, the name of the organization is Community in Schools. And the concept here is that this agency, this nonprofit, will come into a school and bring services that the school cannot provide on its own, and they will be located in the schools. They call themselves Community in the Schools. It's a national organization. It's been around for several decades. When I say national, it's pretty big. There are currently 2,300 schools, and they call themselves schools and community-based sites. In other words, they are based in the schools. They serve something like 1.5 million young people and their families annually. They're in 25 states. Their mission is to support students in the school system by empowering them to stay in school and achieve in life. What I'm saying here is that their real function, they are interested in high-risk students, keeping them in school as opposed to them dropping out of schools. A kind of single-focused, we'll call it a single purpose. And they want to do this through building relationships that empowers the at-risk student and empowers them to stay in school and achieve in life. They have got at least a 20-year history, and they've been rather successful in what they do. I am really interested in this model and the other schools that I will talk about, community schools, they're all models. This model focuses on the at-risk student, keeping the at-risk student from dropping out, but keeping the at-risk student to help stay in school. That's huge. If you know the number of students who drop out each year across the country, you'll see why this is so huge. We have millions of students dropping out. I think we have something in the neighborhood of 100 students a day dropping out of school nationwide. You also are probably aware that when a kid is either suspended or expelled, once being either suspended or expelled, and decreases that student's possibility of completing school or graduating. Twice, it decreases further. Three times, each time there's an incident, it further and decreases that child's chances of staying in school and completing school. So you have an organization that's nationwide that seeks as its mission to identify and work with this population, and they do it within the school setting. Hence, they call themselves the communities in school. They work to some extent with adults, the parents, of course, and what they try and do is go to where the kids are. That's the school. They want to build trusting relationships. They want to treat the whole child. They're, quote, child-centered. And they do all of this by working in partnerships with other community organizations, like nonprofit, healthcare entities, on and on. Their approach, which they say is key to their survival, their long-term existence, and their success, is that they take a non-partisan approach, partisan approach, and they consider this to be essential to giving them the credibility that they need in order to do their job. Now, I think that's huge, again, because especially since 2002, and you know where I'm going here, with No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, Zero Tolerance, Cops in Schools, the advent of the school-to-prison pipeline, but enhancing that phenomena. When I talked a couple shows back about the notion of youth, and particularly minority youth, black youth specifically, being super predators, being targeted, end up in the juvenile justice system, and from there into the adult justice system. Here's an organization that makes it their goal, their mission, is to find these kids in their communities, work with them, and keep them in school, reducing the chances that they will drop out, and hopefully increasing the chances that not only will they graduate, but they will be successful after school. So the purpose, let's go back and look at, you know, their purpose. They started off as a, I think they're still a nonprofit, but in the very beginning, they were a nonprofit. They were, as I said, nonpartisan. They were driven by a vision and a mission that was established by the man who organized this project. He was considered a visionary, he was considered a humanitarian, and he was doing, obviously, the right thing, a good thing. Over the last 15 years, this model that was started some 20-some odd years ago has somewhat morphed into what we see elsewhere, the professionally managed, data-driven enterprise that uses research and evaluation to influence the structure and its operations and innovations. Let me tell you what I'm saying here in this last part. We have an organization who had a great purpose and was motivated by a good moral instinct. It was doing its job, but over the last decade and a half, there's been a sort of like a transition, and it's becoming more like a corporate-style organization driven by the same set of principles that we look at the corporations and say that they are no longer serving the public good like they say they are. Now, to what extent becoming this corporate style entity in terms of running now as being the leadership is professionally trained managers as opposed to people who were placed in those jobs because they wanted to serve the community. They were not into, I won't say a profit motive because I don't know any of these people, so I can't say that the current people who are in these jobs are in it in terms of the profit motive. But the fact that we have seen a, I won't say even a turnover. Again, I'm not there. I haven't been there. I know of them. I know through my research about them, but I don't know the day-to-day operations. I've never visited one of their many sites and what have you. But from what I'm reading and my research is showing is that when we go to a professionally managed, data-driven enterprise that uses research and evaluation to influence its day-to-day operation, we're getting into what we see in schools. Schools being pushed to become more efficient. Schools having a market mentality, competition, and what that does to both the people who work in the organization and the people who are being served by the organization. Wanted you to be aware of this. I still think the communities in school is a great concept because of the population, specific population that it's dedicated to serving. And I could go on and on and on. That's one of my favorite things in this world is to work with kids that are at risk. They need our efforts 2 or 3 times more than we give to those kids who are not as threatened to become or who are in the at-risk status. Our next school model, the full-service community school. The name says it all. Full-service community schools. They are the schools that we see that are popping up now in the last few years across the country. Here in Buffalo, I think they just added one more community school to the list, making it 11 schools that are designated community schools within the Buffalo school system, 10 of which are their public schools and one is a charter school. And this is happening across the country. More and more community schools are coming up, and it's because, again, most of the community schools are financed in large part through federal government grants to the states, and grants then passed down to school districts, and then the school districts allocate portions to the various community schools within that district. Full service schools, their name says it all pretty much. They seek to be a really comprehensive community school, comprehensive in terms of the number of different services that they offer. They are in the schools, and the school is the primary driver of what services are available in its structure. The first school that I talked about, Communities in School, they are in the school, they have their personnel in the school, but they're not intricately intertwined with the school per se. The school is not the driver in this situation. Whereas in a full service school, the school is the principal driver of the various entities that are in the school providing the service. The school goes out, recruits an entity, nonprofit most likely, and bring them into the school, and they do this in the form of partnerships. This is a feature that you will see in all of the different models of community schools. This partnership, and if I can, if time permits, I'll go much more into the importance of this approach of partnering with different entities. The schools in this scenario, they seek to integrate academics first, youth development, family support, health, human and social services, community development, a much broader plate of services than the communities in school. And the emphasis on academics. You'll find that regardless of the model, or particularly this model, the emphasis is on academics. How these various service providers that they school will partner with, how their service in the end will help with academic achievement. Sort of different motivation here. And I guess I will have to say a little bit more about that. I was going to leave it at that. Model number one was looking at the students that are at risk of dropping out. It was a dropout prevention driven model. It did not go into some of the areas that I just mentioned. They only tried to develop that first model services that will aid the student in staying in school. That's the first goal. And then by doing that, hope that keeping the kid in school will also help that same kid have a more successful life because they stayed in school versus had they dropped out. This full service model here is academic driven. Kind of different purpose. And the idea here is that they have three goals. Help students learn and succeed. That's the first goal. Strengthen families and communities. And very quietly, extend the goals of the traditional public schools further out than normal. And it's that last statement, and I'll tie this into one of the questions that I raised in terms of the community school. Is it the last chance for public schools to survive? What we have here is, I'll raise it as a question again. Are we talking about extending the goals of the traditional public schools further out? And are we doing this for as a purpose to help save the public school? The system, not just an individual school, but the system, or looking at it nationally. Because if you look at the services, the academics, emphasis on academics, youth development, family support, aren't we always talking about the family has to be much more engaged with their children's education, especially in, quote, the poor urban communities? And so if we get the families engaged, you know, you have the parents' night, you have various programs during the year to get the parents to come to school and hopefully develop a relationship with the teachers, the counselors, the administration, so that the teachers, counselors, administration can pick up the phone, call a parent, and tell them there's a problem, or is there a problem, and can, you know, you come in and we work together to solve this problem? Because we know that if we do have the parents involved, they most likely are going to be very supportive of their school. And you know that most parents on national surveys, they will indicate that their school is okay. They like their schools. But it's public school outside of their school that's a mess. So here, you're trying to get this family support. The other one, in terms of health and human social services, this is a recognition that when the child comes into the school, he brings a lot more than his or her physical self. He brings issues, social, psychological, health, community issues into the school when he enters. And these can impact the child's emotional, psychological, behavioral state. And if we could have these services so that we could refer the child to wherever he needs to be, she needs to be referred to, then hopefully that will make that child, and we're not talking about just a single child, of course, I'm using it as an example, but that child and all the other children who brings a lot more into the school each day than just their physical self, if they can be serviced by these in-school agencies, then hopefully there will be less problems in the classroom, less problems in the school, kids will be kept in school, and they will be more engaged in the curriculum, the pedagogy, and as a result, they will do better, the class will do better, the school will do better, and the achievement will be recognized when it's necessary. I won't say I'm lying. I am saying there's a motive, there's a purpose behind this model, like the other models. In deeper, if you dig deeper, you're familiar with that. I think it's an African saying, it takes a village to raise a child. The schools are creating that village in their schools. It's a good thing. But that's what they're doing. They're getting the help from the community, which is stand-in in this situation for the village, to help educate, raise that child. Remember, the school's primary function is that of socialization, turning out young adults who are obedient to a particular ideology. I'm just saying the way it is, people. That's what the schools do, is to socialize our children from preschool to high school, even into college, to be, when they say, you know, they're ready to career college, they have been shaped mentally, more so than physically, to come out and play a role that they were shaped to play. With these services, they help the schools do its primary mission more efficiently, more effectively. Even though I'm saying it as a knock, it is and it isn't. I am a strong advocate of the community schools, have been for multiple decades. For those of you who have been with the show for a while, you know I worked. I was a director, helped develop a community school-like thing when I was in graduate school at Wayne State University, one of the first ones of this year. And we called it was Wayne State Community Extension Center. And we did some of the things that I mentioned in terms of youth development. We did academics. We did some community development. We worked with the kids when they got out of school, weekend, during the day, when the kids were at school. The parents could come in, they could take classes, GED courses, community organizing, development skills, and a few other things that we did for the adult, which means we were servicing the whole community. That project came about after King's assassination and they called riots afterwards, and that community, Detroit, demanding from Wayne State University that they share some of their extensive resources with their neighbors, the community. And through some hard negotiations, Wayne had several options. Wayne took the option of leasing a facility from the Catholic diocese that was a very nice facility, and Wayne put its program there, and it was called, as I said, Wayne State Community Extension Program. It lasted for 45 years, from 68 until sometime just a few years ago. But its purpose was to provide these resources so that the community would not rise up again in the fashion that it did in 65 and 68. Okay. Something else here. These full-service schools, they're really, and I don't want to sound like I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth here when I talk about the schools. Again, I am a strong advocate of the community schools, but it's my responsibility to tell you the history of it, tell you the motivations behind the various models, their good parts, their negative and not so good parts, and to remind you again that these schools are rising up all over the place, and to have you remember that question in terms of, is this a way that some people are doing to save public schools? That's an important question. And knowing what I'm trying to share with you about these community schools will help you better understand community schools, what they are all about, the good that they can do, what that they've done, and more. Okay. So everything that I've talked about and so far for all of the community, well, the two of the community schools, the distinction here for the, I'm saying these words over and over again, community in the schools versus the full service community school. All of the services that I mentioned for the full service, they take place on campus. The community in the schools, you'll find them on school campuses, you'll find them in churches, you'll find them in community centers, you'll find them in nonprofit organizations, you may even find some of them in for-profit organizations, because their thing is, we need to set up in the community, and it does not have to be just in the schools. The schools are not the driver of our programs, although what we're doing is related to the school and its purpose, but we are the drivers of this program, whereas the full-service school is based in the schools. I wish we were doing this face-to-face because I would ask the question, how many of you either work in a community school, you know if your district has community schools, where they're located, how many do they have, how long they've been in operation, is the district planning more schools, are they perceived as being successful, are they contributing to the development of the students, both in school, out of school, community. And when I say community, community development, yes, mean exactly that. How the school can contribute to the community which is located, economic, social, political development. I haven't touched on that very much. But that's a big part of all of this community school model, is that component, community development. There's, going off script for just a moment, here in Buffalo and other places, especially when I was doing the road trip, when it came up, but particularly here in Buffalo, now almost everything is social justice and youth engagement, both youth engagement within the school and outside of the school. Big, big push here. Many organizations have formed a coalition of the organization, and their real concern is to get youth and adults engaged in the communities, engaged kids engaged in schools, kids engaged in economic development, the political development, voting, kids becoming activists for their own cause or multiple causes, and getting engaged in school. If you are a teacher and a parent, you should be hopefully at least marginally aware that that is now one big theme in public education, is youth engagement, keeping the kids in school. And by that, I mean not just dropping out or being pushed out, but also truancy. Keeping the kids in school, keeping them moving, making progress towards hopefully graduation sort of stuff. There's a political reason behind that, but that's what we're seeing now across the country, is this tremendous push on engagement, and engagement on a number of fronts. And the community schools play a much more active and effective role in that process than the traditional school, that when the bell rings at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, that's it. Whereas the community schools, many of them are open 7 o'clock in the morning to 7, 9 o'clock at night. Some are open 7 days a week, including summer, to, again, they are the center, the hub of the community. And when I say the center, think of it as this. You can say, when I say center, you think the hub. When I say center, think of the mall. You know, when you go into the mall, you've got 100, 200 stores, as well as the big anchor stores that I mentioned last week, usually on either end or both ends of the mall. This is what that full-service community school is. And this is also what I mentioned last week, what Dewey talked about when he said the school as a social center. He said school as a social center is born out of our democracy movement. So that the schools are supposedly, quote, democratic, the schools as a hub of the community becomes the center place for where democracy shows itself in full bloom, I should say. Didn't mean to get off on that as much, but wanted to get that in. Also, the community schools, the full-service community schools, partnerships. I mentioned it earlier, and I want to speak a little bit about that. Partnerships. All these forms of community schools, and the last one I will talk about in any length would be the 21st century community learning centers. But these community schools, they all rely on partnerships. And what that means is, if you're going to provide dental service to your students and to the community, someone has to provide the expertise. You get a dentist, or if you have a university in your city, you get hopefully the university to come into your school, provide the service. The school itself only provides the space and the services that are offered to the community are picked up by the service provider, university. University could use it as a part of their dental school internship. If they're providing general health services, again, they could have the interns, possibly a resident or so, nursing schools could provide interns. Your partner picks up the financial cost of providing the service. The school doesn't. That's what I'm trying to get to. So you go out, you make these partnership connections with organizations. They're in the community most of the time. Sometimes it's private entities that you will make partnerships with, and they too have to carry the financial burden. But there's also could be some profit-making possibilities for some. But ostensibly, it's partnership-driven structure. And it's that way because, quote, supposed to be doing a public good, and each partner is paying his or her own way in terms of contribution being made to the community. I'm going to switch over now to our last one, and it's the 21st Century Community Learning Centers. It came about in 1994, got a big, big push in 2002, hint, hint, 2002, No Child Left Behind. The 21st Century Community Learning Center is primarily an after-school program. After school, which means you may not have weekends. You may have marginal services during the summer, unless that school has an extensive summer school program. But it's an after-school program financed by federal government through legislation that was initially signed in the law into, as I mentioned, 1994. Their goal is to promote student achievement and prepare. prepare students to compete on a global scale. Let me repeat. Promote student achievement. Prepare students to compete on a global scale. If that is not the heart of No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, I don't know what is. That's that purpose. That's that market-driven reform war that's being waged on public schools in terms of what the public schools' mission should be. It is to prepare students for school achievement via standardized tests. You know the drill. But also have these same students being ready to compete on that global scale so that America will be superior competitor in the global marketplace. We have three main goals. To help students achieve standards like core academic subjects, reading, math, literacy, science, to offer enrichment programs that supplement regular academic programs, like tutoring, and thirdly, to provide educational services for the families of the participating students. And originally, when this program was enacted, people from the community could come and take advantage of the services that were offered. The community-wide, No Child Left Behind, and Race to the Top, the population that could take advantage of the program was narrowed to only those students who were enrolled in the school and only their adult parents, not the rest of the adults in the community and not other kids in the community. This was a result of a narrowing of the curriculum, a narrowing of the population that the curriculum would seek to serve, and to make things more efficient using less money. Again, its name says it all to me, the 21st Century Community Learning Centers. 21st century, man, we're head into the neoliberal agenda that this show talks about all the time, and the move of reducing the scope of the program, reducing the population to be served, fits right into that agenda. And reading and math are the things that are stressed more than anything else. The second goal here is to offer enrichment programs, as I said, supplement regular academic programs. And the third one is to provide educational services for the family of participating students only. I won't get to it now, if I can come back to this topic again, but there was another model called the University Assisted Community Schools. And perhaps the best example of this is the University of Pennsylvania's West Philadelphia Improvement Corps. Fantastic program. University assisted means this. In urban areas where most universities were built, they experienced blight in their city, in their neighborhood where they were located. They experienced all the problems that came about through recessions, through segregation, and the whole nine yards. Many of the universities closed themselves off from their neighbors. Pennsylvania They didn't. They saw it as their duty to become engaged with their local community, and they created one hell of a program that became the model for other universities. And if I could ever get back to it, it's worth me spending some time enlightening you. My time is up. I'm sorry I did not allocate a third hour for this because I'm rushed through it. There's a lot more. But folks, the questions that I raise, is this going to be the model that is going to be adopted with the hope that it will save public education? You got to think about that. This model, community schools, whose interest does it serve? Does it serve the student, the family, the community, or does it serve the Machiavellian agenda as it currently is out there? And what kind of teachers? We're going to need a different kind of teachers, different type of training for teachers in this model, and I would love to be able to get into that, but I have to go. I am sorry that I have to rush this, and I didn't allocate more time. Have a good rest of the Sunday. Hopefully, see you next week. Thank you.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.